head into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place, and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
Yes, folks, here we are. It is October. It is horror season. And last week we talked about the Blob in the 50s. And now today we go 30 years into the future, although it's still 30 years into the past, actually. That's kind of eerie to talk about The Blob 1988. And I've got a great crew for me with me here tonight to talk about The Blob from 1988. Yes, first off, we have the diva in the spoiler room. It is Dawn. Hello, Dawn. How are you?
I am fantastic. It is a genuine pleasure. Thank you.
Fantastic. Glad to have you with us tonight. And next to Dawn is the BFD himself. He's back in the spoiler room with us. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Mr. Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn. How are you, sir?
What up, bitch?
Glad to have you back in the spoiler room, sir. So you make me feel so welcome, too. So I appreciate that.
Always.
And next to Mr. Glenn Bittner. What?
That, I didn't say anything.
And next, Mr. Glenn Bittner, is the lovely Mr. Andrew Shearer is back with us tonight. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm happy to be on the dream team, Dawn, Glenn. Y'all are some of my favorite people to be on here, dude. This is great. Fantastic. We'll talk about any movie. Don't need to be the blurb.
It doesn't need to be the blurb.
No.
Well, tonight, though, we are going to talk about The Blurb, or it is mostly known as The Blob from 1988. Yes, it is a remake of the classic 1958 sci-fi horror film. And, Glenn, do you want to give the synopsis for the film? I know it's a little deep, so.
Yeah, so small town, people like to play football, apparently. Thing falls from the sky, so of course what you do is you poke it with a stick. That was a mistake, because then it eats the dude. It starts eating lots of other people. Don't poke it with sticks, it falls from space, is the moral of the story.
Yep, and there you go, folks. Good night. Don't poke it with a stick. Oh, words of wisdom, to be sure. Yes, it is a remake, and not a beat-for-beat remake, but it does have the general premise and some of the classic scenes in there. We'll touch on those. But first, I want to do, like we always do, get our just general little overall feeling of the film, and then we'll dive into the particulars. And Dawn, we'll start with you. You mentioned a description I thought was very appropriate for this film, but how did you feel about The Blob at 1988?
This movie is so completely 80s. I seriously, without excuse me, without shy of the Valley Girl speak, this is such an 80s movie.
Now, what would you say makes it such an 80s movie? What's one thing for sure that stands out as an 80s film?
Kevin Dillon. He was every 80s bad boy wannabe.
Kevin Dillon, truly. I mean, hair, from the hairstyle to the fact he was the loner riding the motorcycle.
Funny thing, when this movie came out, I was dating a boy that had the hair, same hairstyle, same blue eyes, same way that he dressed, rode the motorcycle, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
Yeah, that was not on purpose.
Uh-huh. Sure, you had a thing for Kevin Dillon, that's all.
No, really not.
And Glenn, how about you? What's your general feeling with The Blob before we get into the particulars?
I mean, you know, I still think it does feel very 80s, but I mean, I think it's still an enjoyable horror film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does have some of the, you know, the tropes, but a lot of horror movies do. But I still think that it's, I mean, for one, I mean, I like the fact that it's pretty much, I mean, Shawnee is kick ass in this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I like that.
Oh yeah, that's always a plus. So
I mean, you have the bad boy who's like, you know, gonna save everyone, and in the end he kind of doesn't. Just he kind of like, I guess, does he gets the assist. He gets the assist for you know, Brian gets the assist for Meg.
Nice. And Mr. Andrew Scheer, your initial feelings with The Blob, 1988.
This was one of the ones I loved as a young man. Mm-hmm. When I started getting into horror movies, this was coming out in the late 80s, which is when I really started to read Fangoria magazine and all of that stuff. And my dad, as a horror fan, taught me how to be a horror fan, which was not to be a piece of shit about remakes. He was a fan of the old Blob, and he loved the new Blob, and we liked watching the old one afterward and talking about him and comparing him and stuff. And I remember being very affected by the effects, and I have some thoughts about special effects in the 80s that are maybe not quite the same discussion as we're used to hearing, so I look forward to maybe opportunity to mention that at some point. But it holds up well. I rewatched it last week on the Umbrella Entertainment Blu-ray. This is the first time I'd seen it actually since I was probably in junior high school. Mm-hmm. And man, I put it up there with the Invaders from Mars that Toby Hooper did, also mm-hmm. a remake. And, I actually, I'm saying this, I think The Blob is better than The Thing and, than Invaders from Mars. I have more fun watching it than those other ones.
Wow.
Yep,
that's
there
a
you go.
Bold statement about The Thing.
That is my statement, and I'd have no problem expounding on that if the conversation ends up there.
Well, actually, you do mention, I mean, because they're not similar films, but I mean, both of them had some pretty excessive gore in them. And, yeah, you know, you mention it now between The Thing and it. I think I could see why you would enjoy The Blob more, because tonally, they are different. It feels like, I mean, the Thing is really heavy serious. Whereas I don't know, personally for me, I mean, I love this film. I really enjoy it quite a bit. I think it ages well too. And we'll get into the special effects, but for me, I enjoy it too quite a bit. But it is a little, it plays a little more, I think, to its campier roots than, you know, The Thing, which is just, I mean, I love The Thing as well, don't get me wrong, but I can see your approach with that. Is that why, Andrew, that you enjoy The Blob more? Would you say it's because it's tonally different? It's not quite as bleak as, say, the Thing?
And there's, it's not a bunch of dudes sitting in, you know, the one room, you know? And the fan base of The Thing is also really bro-y. And his, you know, over time made me a little less apt to like watch the movie. You know, sure. It's The Blob remake is one of the ones that I don't feel is like 100% claimed by the bro-y contingent of the horror, you know, fandom or whatever. It seems to be one that's kind of like, it's not even in the, you know, because Fright Night is one they kind of claim to.
Right.
But The Blob, yeah, you don't see quite as much of that. And I'm not exactly sure why, but yeah, I have more fun watching it than either of those other ones.
Well, it is definitely a fun film, and it's interesting. This is what you, I think, personally, I think you want from a remake, is that it still has the spirit and the core, you know, things going on that what it had before in the first one, and we discussed it last week. But this one, it does improve on a number of things. I mean, first off, though, we'd still do get the classic opening of the meteor crashing and the old guy poking the stick, and like you said, Glenn, poking the stick. Did you think they that it was, you know, it served its purpose, though, still being able to give the homage by pretty much recreating the opening scene?
It's one of the things that happens. I mean, if we didn't have people going around touching and poking things they shouldn't touch and poke, we would have like maybe four movies that would qualify as horror or sci-fi.
Right.
So, I mean, that's how many movies start this way of the, huh, something just fell from the sky. Let's get me a poking stick. Or maybe I should just reach out and touch it. You know, hey, what's that thing lying there on the couch, you know, that just appeared out of nowhere? Don't know, but I suppose I should lick it.
Space boogers.
Yeah, that's just, you know, it's a classic way to open a movie is someone going, someone who obviously did not learn, their parents did not let them touch the oven when they were a kid to learn that it was hot. They just said, no, don't do that. They never learned. And now when they see something that falls from space and is smoking, they're like, I best touch that.
And it was an accurate recreation of the initial encounter of the blob in the first film. Did that bother you at all that they threw that in the remake, or do you think that helped, you know?
No, I don't know. I think a lot of people who saw this probably had never seen the original.
Right.
I personally like when they do little nods to when they remake something, they do little nods, as long as it's not like heavy handed and
slap you in the face. Look at us, what we're doing.
Yeah. But no, I don't mind little nods to stuff like that. I mean, and I'm not a huge fan of the, we're going to do a shot by shot, you know, remake of something that I less enjoy because I'm like, well, then you're just saying that you're the same movie, but you just had better effects because you know, were made 30 years later. I like it when, if they do something a little different, take the original material, just be a little different.
Yeah, I do too. And this one, I think they do it well because we don't get the blob immediately, but when we do, it's pretty much a recreation of the original 58 scene. But enough little bit of a different to go, oh, this is something fresh, but we still recognize it. Andrew, how about you? How'd you like how this film opened with the introduction to our Dylan character and then, of course, the recreation of the 58 scene?
It's good. You know, that I agree with you guys. You know, I think when they remake something, you got a great story that obviously we want to redo and, you know, get the special effects and update and, you know, fix some of the clunky things, the corny things. But mostly just, you know, pay tribute and keep alive a really great movie from, you know, a lot of these guys' youth that were involved in making this, Frank Darabont, Chuck Russell, and, it's a classic monster, and classic monsters never go out of style, no matter how many times and different ways you do it. But I love them keeping the old man, and I love them keeping the movie theater. And, you know, that showed reverence. That told me that they weren't going, this old movie was a piece of crap. We're going to do it the right way and make a good movie, because that old movie's garbage. There was never a time when I felt like they weren't doing that. It was definitely them, you know, covering a classic song and leaving in all the hooks, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, remakes nowadays, some of them, especially when they're based off of the really old films, they, my personal opinion is they feel a little mean-spirited at times with poking too much, you know, they poke a little too much nod to, oh, look at how cheesy this was back then, and I didn't get that impression with this film at all. At any point, really, they were having fun with it, it felt like. Don, how about you? You were on our blob episode last week, and how'd you feel the film opened this time versus the original 58 film? Good, bad?
Good. This film was so much less angry than the 58 version, which, number one, made me like it more.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding the opening, like Andrew said, it wasn't a shot for shot remake, but its pacing was good, and the more iconic spots and scenes they kept, like the meteor coming down, the old man, the theater scene, things like that. They kept the iconic bits,
right,
and updated the rest for good or for bad. Some things were better. Some things were questionable.
What was one of the questionable things? I'm curious.
God.
Oh, you come on. You can tell us.
Okay, so in the choice for movies that they were watching at the theater.
Garden Tool Massacre,
yes. And then the guy in the back, the terrible spoiler guy.
Yeah, that guy, yeah. I mean, that was really 80s trope as far as that goes. The whole
people
talking in a movie theater. I mean, that was, you almost had that in almost every movie that involved the theater. You had someone who was talking in the background too much.
Oh, God, yeah.
But, yeah, I like the way, I thought this opened up actually more solid with it opening up with the football game versus Steve McQueen, who is not teenager, talking.
That helped. Having actual young people.
Yeah, talking to, you know, his girl about the stars, you know, old Steve McQueen.
Why is this guy the hero of that movie, by the way? He's, like, obviously got left back, like, 7 or 8 times.
I don't know.
Do not follow his advice. Do not follow him around.
I mean, we still get the bad boy in this one. Of course, as we mentioned before, Brian Flagg, played by Kevin Dillon, sporting, classic 80s hair with the leather and the attitude and the fact that he's a delinquent and the cops are always keeping their eye on him. So, you know, he's kind of the bad boy of what I guess one of the teenagers in the original may have been. I think 80s represents it a lot better. But we've mentioned Shawnee Smith, Miss Meg Penny, who, unlike the female lead in the first one, Dawn, she's a little bit stronger in this one, isn't she?
More than just a little bit. She totally kicks ass.
She does kick ass. You know, first off, when you first introduced to her, she's just the cheerleader, and you think, oh, great, and she's kind of the damsel in distress. But as the film goes along, she does kick ass. I thought Shawnee Smith did really good in here, because this was around the time when she was kind of the it girl or upcoming it girl for a while, wasn't she? Because she was in a number of other projects, I think, around this time. You seemed to see her a lot more, but then you didn't. which I'm not sure why, because I thought she did great in here. Andrew, what about you? What'd you think?
You just weren't looking.
I just wasn't looking, yeah. I probably just wasn't looking.
I mean, she's done lots of stuff.
Yeah. That's true.
Like four of the Saw movies.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Saw. She was on the TV show Becker. She was
I didn't watch
The X Files. She was on. She's done a lot of TV. She was in the Stand miniseries.
There might have been a gap in feature films around the 80s and 90s.
I may be thinking of the feature.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I mean, you know, Iron Eagle was just a little bit before this, and Harry Crumb.
Oh, I love Who's Harry Crumb. Oh, let's do that instead.
You want to talk about Who's Harry Crumb?
No, we don't. We'll stick with the plan.
No, it's okay. She was good in this. I you know, appreciated quite a bit. And for an 80s film, Andrew, you mentioned Tawny Smith. You like how she was in this. Did you think her character, the way it was written, was maybe a little bit different for a late 80s film?
I think they went a little Aliens Terminator-y with her, you know. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for Nye the Comet, I would have to say it would have been cool to have her with that machine gun in her, still in her cheerleader outfit. Not because I have a cheerleader thing, but just because of that juxtaposition, you know. But like I said, there was already Nye the Comet, so they couldn't have. But still, you know, I know at the time people thought, well, you know, you're behaving in some sort of a masculine action movie way. We can also have you dressed down, you know. Well, I always just dig when they're like in a prom dress and a machete. I don't know why. That's just me.
That was one thing with her. She was badass, but she didn't, and I hope I'm not out of line, she didn't seem to lose her femininity, which sometimes happens with the way writers write strong female characters.
Oh, yeah, because they don't know how to write a female without just changing her to a man completely. But the scene in the diner where she is, you know, having it out with Mr. Flagg there, and when she slams her hand on the table, she's a great actor. Her acting is incredible all the way through the film. But in that particular scene, she makes it clear right away she doesn't take any shit. And, you know, definitely doesn't take any of his shit.
Yeah.
So they're kind of end up on equal footing really, really quickly. At no point is he like, get away from me, Barbie. You know?
Yeah. She's like, no, no, get away from me. No, yeah. He doesn't back down, but at the same time, she establishes that she is not just going to be the damsel.
No, and they totally don't have that period of time where she has to prove that she's smart and prove that she's, you know, strong and all those other things. She just right out of the gate is, they don't have that, you know, surprise, I'm not an idiot kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you think maybe at first, because the, you know, when she sits there and she's on the date with Paul, and that's when they run into the old man, and then they also run into Bad Boy, because Bad Boy ran across the old man who's got his blob on his hand, and they're in the hospital, and yeah, this was kind of one of the first surprises in this film. Here we have a character, Paul, played by Donovan Leitch Jr., and we see him for like 15 minutes or so, and you think, okay, it's going to be a three-person team here with the love triangle between him and and Meg and Brian. But Glenn, we don't get that, do we? Paul, something happens to Paul, doesn't it?
Paul experiences unification.
What'd you think about that? I mean, because they set this character up and then all of a sudden, bloop.
I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I like it when they kill someone that, you know, in traditionally that they would be like, oh, no, this, I mean, you know, the football player with the cheerleader, of course he's got to survive.
Right.
And they didn't set him up like the type of jock that you would expect to get killed, because he's not like set up as like some gigantic, you know, prick.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a high school kid and he's horny, sure, but
he's not like Mr. Hands in the parking scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, we can at least say that, you know, such types of, you know, sexual assaulty type scenes were so rare in 80s movies that 90s movies, 2000 movies, 70s, 60s, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I like that they kill him off. I think they do that well. I mean, mm-hmm. the only part of the movie that really bugged me was at the very end when she lures the blob in and then she jumps off the truck and then gets her foot stuck.
Yeah.
It's like this, something's like, oh shit, we have to have a guy do something other than just crash the truck.
Yeah, that felt almost like you're robbed. I was so digging it. I'm like, oh man, really? Her foot gets caught? Really? Yeah. Really?
Actually, I should say there were two things that bugged me. There's also I hate lame foreshadowing of the, oh yeah, my zipper sticks. Oh, yeah. Oh my god,
well, there's a lot of foreshadowing. You get the other foreshadowing right in the beginning where Bad Boy's trying to make the jump over the ravine.
Yeah.
And he can't. But you know, since he can't now, it's going to play a part in later on in the
film. Yeah, when he can outrun a helicopter.
Yeah, but if I was like, you know, I was watching this, I was like 11 years old.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know?
Well,
I think that the original blob was kind of made with kids in mind, and I feel like this one kind of was too, you know?
Oh, yeah. This was the, you know what kids like? Dukes of Hazzard, and Dukes of Hazzard like to jump over shit.
Yeah, they did.
And don't forget severed arms.
And yeah. Severed arms.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of severed arms in Dukes of Hazzard. If you watch the director cuts.
If you watch the director's cut.
Boys went and got their arms severed.
Yeah, Roscoe Pico Train actually has a collection of arms in his trunk.
Those aren't his. Those belong to Cletus.
Well, Roscoe P. Nipple Belt.
But yeah, I was surprised that Paul bit the dust. And I remember because he's part of the famous scene. I think it was on a cover of Fangoria, Andrew, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yep, that part, and that was really his face. And when they shot the scene, Shawnee Smith apparently thought it was going to be a puppet special effect or something like that, and it really freaked her out because he was really in there, and so her reaction is, like, genuine when she screams.
Oh, sweet. I didn't realize.
Yeah, they did a little switcher. You know, 'cause a lot of scenes in The Blob is nothing more than some silk sheets
right.
and stuff. You know, they really used a lot of... we'll talk about the effects later. I don't want to get into that now. But, like, yeah, that reaction of hers was real because he was able to just sit inside it, a real guy.
And it was effective as well. And, you know, she fainted, and I guess where I was going with that, you know, at the beginning you think, oh, this is kind of where they're going with her character. But she grows a pair real quick and shows that, yeah, she's tougher than some of the guys in town. Don, what'd you think about Paul getting aced early and Shawnee Smith in this scene?
It worked well. Like you said, it was he was definitely appeared to be getting set up to be, you know, the Steve McQueen equivalent in this one. From, you know, his conflicting with Kevin, yeah. Calling the police, yelling at the doctor to get it and help.
Mm-hmm.
And then boom.
he gets the blob dropped on him.
Herb. He does.
He becomes blob food.
yeah.
So we do have a sheriff in here, just like we did in the first one, old Sheriff Herb. And he's another character. Yes, this is spoiler room, folks. He's another character that, Don, he survived till the end of the original film, but he does it in here. How do you think they handled his death? Did you like the fact that we don't see what really, you know?
Yeah, you don't really get to see it well-ish. It's kind of one of those, holy crap, what happened to him moments.
Well, and it was directed well, too, I thought, that phone booth, because the woman who runs the cafe, the blob, is in there now. And while Shawnee Smith, Megan Bryan hide in the freezer and find out that the blob doesn't like ice. But he chases her to the phone booth, and the blob covers the phone booth, and she's talking. She calls the cops and she asks, you know, where is the sheriff? Oh, and the sheriff went down, you know, the sheriff just went down to the cafe. And just as they say that, his face appears. Andrew, what'd you think about the direction of the scene? How do you think they handled that? Did you feel robbed? You didn't see his interaction with the blob, or did you think that was effective?
No, this movie, it's so well written, so well structured. I know we bust on some of the really like corny foreshadowing and you know, the stuff with the zipper and the motorcycle jump, but seriously, for the most parts, you gotta admit, I mean, they did this so well. And you know, they were that phone booth thing as a kid was terrifying to me, because at first you're like, oh it's a dead person, I know, but it's also a dead person that you care about. They did not write these people as these, you know, that's another distinction we have to make about some of the horror or gore later, the people that claim to be influenced by 80s gore, 80s splatter, they completely missed the point. Like, these movies were not being nihilistically made. Mm-hmm. They cared about these were great. A lot of these people that bit the shit were good people. You know what I mean? The people writing it did not think this was just cannon fodder. You know, like, here's this guy and we're going to kill him. They populated with good actors, well-written characters. They established relationships with these people. You have enough time to like them, and then you see them pulled apart and it bothers you. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Even the old guy, we don't get a whole lot of time with the old guy, but you know,
he's a poor old fart, you know, yeah. What did he do to deserve that? Oh God. And he gets a very gruesome, you know,
I don't care about him. His dog.
There you go.
He had a dog.
He did have a dog. What happened to the dog, I wonder?
Yeah.
Well, they don't fucking murder it like they do in The Thing, for one thing.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think the dog was smart to be like, fuck, I'm out of here.
The dog is like, don't smell like alcohol to me. I'm fucking out.
You do. You care about the characters. Even you care even about the your stereotypical young kids who we have in here, similar to what we had in the 58 one, where you had the young kids, and they had a bit of a trope about them. I suddenly, you know, this one thing, watching this, I realized why I am the way I am with films, and I apologize to everyone involved, because there was this running trend in the 80s of young kids seeing movies they shouldn't have. And you get it with these two, the two kids here, but you even care about them because they're just being normal kids of sorts, even if they are a little bratty. But you're right. Yeah, you do care about the characters in here.
Or and, at least like them, you know. The only one you don't like is the, you know, Mr. Date Rape. And
well,
you know,
he gets it well.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's the only, like, you know, Friday the 13th-y type character. And, you know, but they, you know, they make you want to see him die, which is, you know, pretty interesting considering for the most part that's not what they do with this film at all. But that is a very 80s thing to do. Just be like, please, Blob, hurry up before he gets to this girl's breast.
Yeah, yeah. And he totally regrets trying to grope her when she passes out. The old wet bar in the trunk.
It's fucking awful. What I wanted to happen was for him to put his hand down there and it just melted right off. That would have been so great.
Yeah, but still, what happens to him is pretty still. You know, he still gets he still gets melted.
Yeah, kind of species style. Pretty good.
Kind of species style, yeah.
Yeah.
But we do have bad guys in here. And Glenn, who are the bad guys in here? Not really the Blob, because the Blob is just a victim of his circumstance. But who are the real bad guys in here, as typical 80s film?
Mormons.
Besides,
fucking A.
Besides,
the government, of course.
Yes.
It's the 80s. Of course, if it's not the Russians, it's the government.
Right? And why don't you tell them a little bit about our government folks and the bit of a twist as well that they put that is different from the original as far as the origin of the Blob?
Biological warfare.
Yes. What'd you think about that twist? Did you like it? That totally feels like 80s, though. Just
oh, it's super 80s. Super, because I mean, you know, you're at the, you know, this is the height of the Cold War, where it's the, we need, you know, everything is about, you know, getting the upper hand on those Ruskies.
Yeah.
If that means we have to have a thing that big, you know, thing that eats a whole Midwestern town or wherever we are, I forget where we are, but an entire town, so be it. At least then, you know, we can unleash this thing on Russia, and then it eats all of Russia, and by then it's the size of New Hampshire, and then we can't stop it.
Yeah.
And everybody dies. But hey, at least we died last.
We died after the Russians died.
Yeah. Although it wouldn't work in Russia anyways.
No, because it was cold.
Yeah.
And cold affects it.
This was poor planning on their part. Like they didn't test it. That's the one thing they should have tested for. Two things. Can't handle cold, can't handle vodka. If the answer is no to either of those, it won't work against the Russians.
First time it goes to Siberia, it's going to die.
Yeah.
Don, did it feel like totally 80s to you with the government being the bad guys?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, being headed, and especially, you know, the biological warfare part and sacrificing these few Americans for the greater good. So 80s with the government being evil. It didn't really even dawn on me too much till I'm watching them going, oh man, this was a trend in the 80s of the government. Even though it was Cold War, the government is bad. Even our own government is doing bad things. Which I did get a kick out of the fact, though, that we have the head of the bad guys, Dr. Meadows, played by Joe Seneca. And the reason I got a kick out of that is because I was used to him as being Willie Brown in Crossroads with Ralph Macchio.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that movie. I'm not afraid to admit it, but
it's been forever since I've seen that one.
Crossroads?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, he was classic villain. Andrew, what'd you think about our head villain of the government group? Mr. Dr. Meadows.
He's really, really good. What did I know him from? Like, Yeah, Crossroads, but God, there was another amazing one that he was in. School Days. Spike Lee's School Days.
School Days, yep. He was in School Days.
Well, yeah, it reminded me of kind of how they had Zake Smokey being the bad guy in Serpent in the Rainbow. You know? Mm-hmm. You get to just like, you have to really believe this dude as a scientist. He can't be like a type. You know what I mean?
Right.
Bill Moseley is in this, is like one of the underlings or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he has a great freak out face, you know, but you put a guy like Moseley as the bad guy. You know, you're just, it's something about having a guy like him play this sort of a role makes them believe at first that maybe he doesn't have some kind of macabre interest, you know?
Right.
Like maybe like he really does. Like they might be okay. You have to kind of trust him the way the characters kind of trust him at the beginning. And he's got one of those faces that could, you know, he can go from one to the other.
He had a grandpa face.
He does. Absolutely.
You see him. He's an older scientist and the way he talks and presents himself. Yeah. It's exactly the way you want him. You know, that false, he's like, oh yeah, I trust this guy. I really do. Cause look at him. He's grandpa.
Yeah, very important. Very important. Yeah. And to cast an actor like that that you've seen in things where you do trust him.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned too, the casting in this film is actually really good. Some of the veteran actors they get in here. But yeah, Dr. Meadows, I thought, was very convincing in this film. Glenn, how about you with the Dr. Meadows character? Did you like him and the direction they took with him?
Oh, yeah. It's like he's an ass. But it's like he kind of doesn't want to be, but feels he has to be.
For the greater good, right?
Yeah, for the greater good.
Be an ass for the greater good.
it's what makes a good villain when they're not just a, you know, they're not just a, I'm going to be bad because I'm bad. It's the, they're bad because what they think they're doing, they think they're doing something that might be bad now, but in the overall, you know, annals of history, it'll be a good thing.
Yeah. Like, I just watched Faust again, and it's exactly that, doing the wrong thing for the right reasons.
Right, and he sells it earnestly. I mean, you believe Dr. Meadows, don't you, Don, that he truly believes what he's doing is right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's more scary sometimes than, you know, some guy who's just a douche who wants to watch the world burn. I mean, this guy, he just really is into it. And Joe plays it so well. I love his character. Plus, he also gets his comeuppance as well with the blob, because you do need that in a film like this. And speaking of the blob, we brought it up before, we hinted around with it. And why don't you, Andrew, tell us how you feel about these special effects, because you've mentioned it with the blob in general in this film. How do you feel about it?
Well, I've been thinking about, and people have been talking about practical effects and the 80s being like this boom of practical makeup effects. And, you know, a lot of these movies are just seen as like the height of physical things. And things being built and made. We've talked about gore and all that stuff. Your Tom Savini's, your Stan Winston's, I guess this was Tony Gardner, maybe Alterian Studio. I can't remember who did these. John Buechler, Rick Baker. You got all your eight Fangoria heroes that worked on this stuff. But when I started to really think about it was when listening to the commentary of Gremlins. And Gremlins, they started to talk about all the problems that they had and all the late hours and the ridiculous things they were doing. And, you know, I was thinking like, well, if they made a Gremlins 3, they would do it all CGI. How mad would people be? But here's the thing. Here's my thing. When they remade The Blob, they didn't really technologically have like that much more in their toolkit than they did when they made the old Blob. But hear me out. They were given way more time and money than those effects artists were back then with the Blob, because there was no precedent for this big special effects movie. The people that made the old Blob were just like, look, homie, here's some Jell-O, here's a booger, make it happen. But in the 80s, the whole game was changed. Makeup was the thing, and they gave, I think, the budget for something like $12, $14 million, and $9 million of it was given to the effects. However, the unsung hero of the practical effects, makeup and puppetry and animatronics of the 80s, cocaine. cocaine. Don't tell me what artist it was. Don't tell me what company it was that did the best or whatever. You can't argue that amazing things were done because of cocaine. Cocaine made people get weirder ideas and it made them work nonstop for 30 hours a week. And it shouldn't be done. It couldn't be done. And humans should not be doing that. I love makeup and practical effects as much as the next person. I don't think CGI is better. I'm on board with all of that. But here's the thing. Human beings were never meant to do what these people did. And they should give an honorary Oscar to cocaine for makeup special effects.
God, I because love
I
you,
don't man. Think I don't think they would have the Blob. I don't think we'd have any of those things. Gremlins, none of that stuff.
Oh yeah.
Without cocaine.
Wow.
I've not.
Come on, you've never thought of it, but I thought of it.
I think cocaine is one of them. There's probably lots of other drugs that also need awards. I was just reading about Fright Night, and I always forget the actor's name. Evil.
Chris Sarandon?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not Chris. Stephen Jeffries.
Is that him?
Evil Ed.
Evil Ed. He spent like 18 hours getting put into that makeup.
Who had 18 hours? Cocaine gives you 18 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, I've not thought about it like that before, but you've just blown my mind on that, Don. What do you think about that? Would you say maybe the '80s and the drug culture may have contributed to things like the Blob and
there was that scene at the beginning where the mom's trying to dope her teenage daughter up in order to get her to not. You know, you've had too much of a shock. Here, have this pill. What are living through chemistries?
That's true. I forget. Yeah, here, take this, honey. You'll feel better. It's Mama's little helper.
Exactly. I mean, Andrew's absolutely right.
You're right. You're totally right, Andrew. suddenly you brought so many things into focus now.
Well, you know, this is not to take away from what they did,
but
what would make a human being be able to do that, think they should do that, and then be actually then able to pull it off when it comes time to actually have that stuff perform. If you spend 18 hours putting it together and then you get on set for another who knows what, up for a few days, you always hear these stories about how many days it took, how long it took, all the things that they made, and you're going like, who, how, cocaine.
Yeah. If your day is gone and you want to ride on, cocaine.
Look at that. Glenn, perfect.
That's fantastic, Glenn. You summed it up well. And Sully, I hope that gave our listeners a lot more food for thought, because I know it did for me. I snorted that right up. No. One of the other things that surprised me was something that doesn't, I guess, maybe I didn't notice it. Maybe I blocked it from my mind, but I don't remember too many kids getting killed in the films in the '80s, like directly on screen. But Glenn, we get a kid death scene in here, don't we? What'd you think about how that scene went?
Good.
Good. how do you feel about that? I
like that they don't shy away, that they didn't shy away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And too often it's, you know, they're not going to kill a kid. They're not going to kill a kid. And they do, which is good.
Kind of kept with the trend of surprise, you know, surprise kills by the Blob in this film. It was like each act had a surprise kill. Mm-hmm. In it, almost, I think. Dodd, how'd you feel about the kid getting off? Is it a bit of surprise considering how little, especially back then, we saw that on screen and rather graphically too.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a surprise, and yet, you know, he was the sacrifice so that the other two could live.
Right. Involuntarily, but
Yeah. I was actually a little bit surprised he didn't die in the theater. He wasn't killed off in the theater.
Right. Yeah, I could see that because of the way they set that up with the theater, mm-hmm. But they had to give, but Meg had to have a chance to shine a little bit more in how badass she was.
That's true.
You know, so that gave her, you know, an effort. It gave her a chance, her character a chance to show everybody just how much of a badass she could be.
And also how much of a nurturing person she could be.
Yes, at the same time. I mean, yeah, her character just is so well written in this film, especially for a late 80s film. Andrew, how about you with kids dying on screen, especially in you know, in this? Is it a surprise for an 80s film?
Well, dude, you want to talk about the things that were telegraphed in this movie?
Yeah.
Poor Homies looks just like the leading kid.
Yeah.
Not quite as movie handsome. Mm-hmm. You don't know his mama and daddy. You know, he's a little precocious and a little crude. You're like, you're not going to make it, bud. You know? And so, but the way that they do him, it's not like, whoa, he gets sucked underwater. She goes after him, comes back up Voorhees style. That last scare. That's a good one, man. But you know, you want to scare kids watching a horror movie? Kill a kid.
Yeah.
Kill a kid or put him in mortal peril. That scares kids watching a movie. Because then you go like, you know, you see grown-ups dying, and you're like, well, fuck grown-ups. But when you see that, I mean, for real.
You're real. But, no, you're right.
But when you see a kid dying, you're like, no, me. That could happen to me. You know, that's how a kid mind, or at least I remember, seeing movies where, oh, what was it? Which Superman has the little boy goes over Niagara Falls? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. I think that was two.
Maybe second one.
Yeah, it's two. That fucked me up.
Mm-hmm.
That fucked me up seeing that kid go over. It made me so scared because it was a kid. You know, if it had been just Joe Q with Slurpee, I'd be like, oh, fuck him. But I don't know, for some reason that, it's scary. Like, it's scary, and not like in a Pet Sematary way scary. This was more of just like, you know, you know, yeah. They don't just kill the teenagers; they kill you too, Jimmy. It's more of just like. That was a nod to the people they knew was watching the movie. It really was. Right. Not one of y'all, too. Look out. We'll get anybody.
Yeah, because we're talking 80s, and the kids, young kids who were too young to be watching our films like this are watching our films like this. I know. Yes. I was one of them.
Like smoking one of the Goonies, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you're right. The way this kid died, too, though, it wasn't just you think at first he falls into the water, you know, the blobs in there. You're like, oh, OK, she's just going to do one of those where she goes underwater. She comes up, can't find them. OK, we're going to leave. And then, you know, maybe the blob reappears. But no, he pops up like you said, all Voorhees. He's melting. And then he gets dragged, and you still see him drag kind of jaws along the surface of the water for a while. And then gets pulled under. You're just like, oh, damn. No, he's.
Yeah, maybe they looked at like the deputy sheriff guy and was like, hey, man, we should like have him melt and be all gross and screaming. Nah, they did that in RoboCop. Same actor? Yep, same actor.
Same actor.
We'll get the kid.
Yeah, they couldn't melt him.
Don't melt me again, man. Come on.
Don't melt me again. I get to play a good guy this time. Kind of a good guy.
We'll give you more cocaine, 18 hours in the chair. Ah, it's true. Can I just take the mustache?
And yes, this blob, just like in the original, is
vulnerable.
Huh?
Yeah, nothing.
No, go ahead.
Not Mormon. No.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I almost forgot. We've got to talk about the priest.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The priest character in this. Go ahead, Glenn. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Priest character and where they take him. Man. Is that another surprise, I think?
It's the guy who they kicked out of Footloose Town because he was a bit too much. yeah, he's great. And, you know, it's not really a great kind of possible end of the world type horror, because that's mean if the blob had gone unchecked, you know, it would have eaten everything. It's not a good end of the world type thing without some, you know, priest going, this is it, this is what I've trained for, this is, you know, this is the end of the world, here we go, let's do it.
Sorry, remember your training. Sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize.
I got my holy water, got my jar with blob in it. I'm all good.
I apologize if I offend anyone, but I'm just picturing a cargo hold full of priests, just like in Starship Troopers, and you've got the cardinal up there going, "Remember your training, and you will get out of this alive." But sorry,
that was funny. I can envision it.
You can envision it now.
I can.
So going to hell.
I'm joined yet. I'm there already. Fuck it.
But the priest, I was surprised with the priest character. Don, did you like it? The fact that he gives us, I mean, of course, the classic kind of open for a sequel ending, but did it kind of surprise you that we had this kind of minor character who ends the film with a little bit of a surprise reveal?
I'm very mixed on this one because when I first saw the movie, I'm like, and I wasn't expecting him to be the righteous man.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I was expecting him to be the corrupt kind of schmoozing up to the younger ladies kind of priest.
Right.
Because that was a trope even back then.
The sleazy priest, yeah.
The sleazy priest, yeah. So the fact that he was actually pious and righteous and kind of ended up delving into the zealot was logical.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely have mixed feelings about that end because it's the way it's kind of a political statement.
Sure.
Because as the movie was very much about conspiracy theories and anti-government, anti-establishment, anti-authoritarian, what's more establishment and authoritarian than your church?
Right.
And for your church to actually threaten to cause the apocalypse,
mm-hmm.
not just save you from it, but to cause it, that's awfully cynical.
Yeah. Compared to the rest of the film, you're right. The ending is a bit cynical.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm not sure if they took it that far or they were just trying to leave it open for a sequel. Glenn, what do you think? You think they were trying to be cynical with this ending with the priest or were they just trying to leave it open for a movie? Because Don makes a good point about it.
I don't know. I mean, it was the 80s, so of course they're thinking sequel.
Sure. By 88? Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Andrew, how about you? Do you think it was a little more cynical than the rest of the film for this ending, or do you think they were just maybe going for that sequel angle?
I'm not sure. I mean, speaking of sequel, that guy was in the Beware of the Blob, the sequel to the Blob. His name is Del Close, like the godfather of modern improvisational comedy. He wrote this book called Truth in Comedy, which is like, you know, anybody who's interested in Saturday Night Live or, you know, anything like that, really read it. It's helped me writing comedy. I know this is a tangent you did not ask for. I'm going to tell you anyway. Del Close, he was very active in Second City and Saturday Night Live, at least the original cast, and a lot of the first Saturday Night Live cast, they all trained under him. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy. But I as a kid, I thought that ending was rad.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit, man, the Blob coming back. But, yeah, coming back to it as an adult, because I've since read Del Close's Truth in Comedy, so I'm like, oh, shit, there he is. Like a ton of movies. He was mostly all, you know, improvisational theater training people that went on to make comedy classic films, you know, in television. So it was, I got tripped up on that. Didn't even think about it. Any of the politics or cynicism or anything like that. Like, I'm there. I was just like, yeah. And then I looked him up and I was like, oh, fuck. He was in Beware of the Blob. Not playing the same guy, but, you know. But no, to be honest, yeah, I could see that because, like, you got to be afraid of anybody who thinks, like, the ultimate thing you could possibly do is die.
Right.
You know, and take as many people as you can with you. That's a scary thing. But he got the juice now, gross grandpa.
Which again, now that you mention it, it's interesting that he's in this role considering he is a comedic actor now that you mention it, but he showing that, you know, what Robin Williams said, that there wasn't a huge amount of difference between doing drama and comedy.
What a great freaky. Oh God. What an awesome performance.
Yeah. He takes the glasses off. He's got the cloudy eye and the burn marks from, because he got burned from the.
Yeah. That great shot where he turns his head. Look at the special effect. Some guy, you put cocaine for 12 hours.
Put this makeup on me, which looked really good. So,
yeah, so thanks, cocaine.
Thank you, cocaine. And I think that's what we'll end it tonight, is thanking cocaine for the film of The Blob. Unfortunately, we didn't get a sequel because estimated it was a budget of 19 mil, and it only made 8 million back. And it's unfortunate because I think in many ways this is kind of a underappreciated film personally. Especially revisiting it, I'm watching it going, this is just a fun film. This is just people, they're having fun. They're giving an ode to the original without being too mean-spirited. And you could tell they're having fun and want to put the audience a little bit on their heels, but, you know, still falls into some of those 80s tropes. But yeah, it, watching it back, I think it still holds up. So I think we'll just go down the aisle here and see if these fine folks would recommend The Blob to someone looking at maybe watching a 80s horror film with some practical effects in it. So, Don, would you recommend The Blob and why?
Oh, absolutely. It's fun. It's very much standard for the 80s. It holds up well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Glenn, how about you? Would you recommend The Blob, and what would be your reason for it, your main reason?
I would absolutely recommend it. I think it holds up well enough, and it's good classic horror with some, I think, some decent, gory effects, which are pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought the gory effects were cool, but not too excessive either.
No, but and some of them were, some of the, that shot in the phone booth is just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So little shots like that where most of the effects, they're done to not just simply to, you know, how gross can we be, which is what how some horror films go, is the, you know, how many different ways can we tear off someone's arm, but they're done I think to good effect in this movie.
Yes, I have to agree as well. And Andrew, would you recommend The Blob, and what would be the main reason behind recommending this?
Well, first of all, it's just got great writing, great structure, wonderful characters, wonderful actors. And like we've mentioned, it is not a nihilistic kind of a movie, not a dark movie, it's not out there for shock value. It does want to tell a great monster movie story, but also not just great special effects, but many different varieties of special effects. Because we didn't mention there's some miniature in this movie. There is some stop motion. There is rear projection. They're using a lot of classic techniques in this film. And it's wonderful to then, you know, I know a lot of people are fucking assholes about remakes. And I know there's like a cutoff year for when all the good remakes were made. I'm not exactly sure if that's like 2003 or something like that, when it's everybody started to hate every remake. But really, you can watch The Old Blob and watch the remake of The Blob. And it's neat to kind of compare the similarities with the effects. They're kind of not that different. They're just more expensive. And it's amazing to me. But yeah, it's a great monster movie. Absolutely. If you like monster movies, please watch it. It's good fantasy. When we think of horror, especially 80s horror, we tend to think of splatter, gore, slasher. But this is not that at all. And because of that, I feel it got away with a lot more too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you get the feeling this film, and we've all watched enough films. And I think you can make a statement. You can tell when a film is taking itself too seriously and when it realizes what it is and it kind of has fun with it. And The Blob, this one to me always felt like they knew what they were making. And they were having some fun with it. I mean, they still wanted to make a good film, but at the same time, it it has serious horror moments, but for me, I have fun with this film because you can tell they seem to have fun with this movie.
And I think it's the same. The original producer of The Blob also produced the remake. I think he was still alive and active in the industry.
Yeah, I believe so as well. And let's just give a brief brief mention that this is directed by Mr. Chuck Russell, who had just the year prior directed Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, and who in 6 years later would direct The Mask. He also directed Eraser, and then it tapered off. He directed The Scorpion King or whatnot. Hasn't done a whole lot, but I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and then followed up with The Blob, that's a fun double feature right there. And I would definitely recommend it as well. It's fun. It's not too serious. It breezes by. I mean, this film just keeps moving, in all honesty. Even when you think with the hospital scene, and especially compared to the original, which had its slower moments, this one, just when you think it's going to be slower, in the hospital scene, all of a sudden, boom, Paul's getting melted. It's like, just when you think, oh, we're going to get into a little heavier dialogue scene, all of a sudden the blob shows up again. Suddenly you have that threat again. But this film, I think, just moves constantly. You know, it's only an hour and 35 minutes, too, back in the day when they didn't feel like they needed to make a film 2 hours for whatever reason they do now. I'd recommend it as well. So there you have it, folks. The Blob, 1988. If you haven't done your 31 Days of Horror, looking for a film to fill a slot, I think we all here would say, check out The Blob, 1988, especially if you like some gore, some practical effects, and some fun. So there you have it. I want to thank my panel so much. As always, I appreciate their time and taking to talk to us about film. And now this is the part where we give them a license to shill, and they can tell you where you can hear them or read them when they aren't here. So Dawn, go ahead. Where can they find some of your stuff at?
You can find me in theaudience.net.
Fantastic. And Mr. Glenn Bittner?
You can, where you're mostly going to find me now when I'm not here is with my gaming podcast that I do with the amazing Brad Ludwig. That would be The Adventure Party, and you can find that at gncast.com. Or whenever I feel like working on my games, you can find those as well. Just follow me on Twitter at Guy in a Bunker is probably the best way to keep in touch with me.
Awesome. Fantastic. And Mr. Andrew Shearer, I know you've been a busy man making a lot of great films and having fun, and I appreciate you taking your time. And what stuff out there can they find of yours?
Oh, well, if you're anywhere near within driving distance of Athens, Georgia, November 2nd and 3rd of this year, we are having our annual Gonzo-rific Underground Film Festival. It's all movies that have made here in Athens by my friends and I, featuring such new titles as The Bloody Brides of Bad Girl Dracula, Vincent Price's Skull, and Wet T-Shirt Zombies, and and all kinds of other crazy stuff. But if you cannot get out here, we would love it if you would get on Amazon Prime and stream all of our films. You can find them at amazon.com/V, as in vagina, victory, /gonzorific, GONZORIFFIC. And if you're too cheap to do that, you can always just Google us and watch some of our stuff on YouTube or something.
Fantastic. Some great stuff out there, folks. Check out all of these fine, talented folks' stuff. There's links as well on specialmarkproductions.com under Friends of SMP. Thank you so much for listening. We keep growing all the time, and it's because of you fine folks out there and these wonderful people on our panel. And so I think tonight, let's just say good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Sorry, I love the song. Beware of the cocaine, it makes you move.
Oh, yeah. Hey, all my friends out there looking for more spoiler room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive spoiler room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on to Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the spoiler room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the spoiler room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.